Dame Football Saturday continues with WSBT Game Day. Here's your host, Evan Sharpley.
And we're back. Notre Dame looks to bounce back following a tough 2019 loss last week. The Fighting Irish head to Boston to take on the Steve Adazio-led Eagles. Kickoff is set for 3:30 p.m., but for the next hour, I'm your host, Evan Sharpley, along with my producer, State Farm agent Tim Growl. And if this is your first time tuning in, this show is all about setting the atmosphere, countdown to kickoff, if you were, and talking with former Irish players, discussing X's and O's. Today we have a former player of Coach Ara Parseghian as we continue our tribute to him throughout this entire year, the voice of the Fighting Irish, Don Crickey, and team doctor, Brian Radigan. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
What time is it? Is it still morning, right?
It's still morning and stuff too.
You have a good week?
I had a great week, you know. And as I was telling you off the air and stuff, I think the S in WSBT now stands for Sharpley, because I can't turn WSBT on without hearing Evan Sharpley.
You just like to turn it on to hear my voice.
Oh, it does. What is this? Is this our? I can't even remember. My wife was asking me this. Our fifth year together.
Man, is
pretty
it?
Close. I think so. Time flies when you're having fun.
Right, it is.
You're just like my wife there. You have to put up with texts like every game when Notre Dame does something. I don't want to say stupid, but sometimes things just don't go well and I have to vent to you, so I text you and you're nice enough from the press box to text me back.
It was a good game. You know,
absolutely was.
A 1-point loss is tough, you know, but it was competitive for four quarters. Certainly some plays I think that they would like back, and, you know, watching the film, they'll be able to correct some of those mistakes. And, you know, the question has been posed throughout the week of, does it feel like last year? You know, is it the same type of another close loss in the fourth quarter? I didn't really get that feel. I thought it was competitive throughout. It wasn't like the wheels were falling off.
No.
And it was a run out the clock type of situation. Georgia's a good team. They made some plays, and, you know, you would hope that your top level guys would match that. But if you look at that Georgia defense, and I'm still convinced, I don't know if Notre Dame's going to see a front seven with that type of speed.
Oh, lateral speed especially.
Right. Unbelievable. I mean, Lowe Carter, really talented. Bellamy, who had the sack at the end of the game. those guys are, they're tough.
Sure.
And for four quarters to go against that speed, and really the speed across the board on the entire defense, I think is going to prepare Notre Dame for the rest of the season, the teams that they play. They're going to see that. You know, I think they'll see a little bit of that type of speed with USC. I don't know if USC's defense is as deep as Georgia's defense is. I think NC State, you'll see it. Miami might be a team that will contend with the type of speed that Notre Dame saw with Georgia. They have the potential to have a really good defense. But, man, you know, they were tough.
You got to like our defense, though. I mean, we had a lot of bright spots and a lot of things that you haven't seen in the last couple of years.
I would say I'm pleasantly surprised through two games. Still, not that I'm sitting on the fence. I'll buy right now.
Mm-hmm.
But until this defense really plays against and defends against a pure passer, I think that there's still some questions that we're going to continue to ask. You have a first-year quarterback. You could look at week one. You know, they had talked about playing three or four quarterbacks, which means that they didn't have a quarterback. You know, this week they have a talented young quarterback who's trained with and under Brandon Winbush's quarterback coach back home. Those two guys know each other. But as we've seen over the past few years, the Boston College offense is usually stagnant at best. You know, if you're looking forward on the schedule, Michigan State has a talented young quarterback as well, but who knows what type of team you're going to get right now with what's gone on in the offseason with them. And then you could say, I mean, UNC lost Mitch Trubisky,
sure.
So there's a hole there. And then also Miami of Ohio coming to town. So you could look to USC as being the next true test as far
right.
as the passing side goes. But that's going to give the defense games to grow and mature. What you're seeing that you have not seen over the past few years is a different energy, a different feel. They're competing hard. It looks like they're playing much more free and loose and reactive. Those are all really good signs. The speed laterally, how they're attacking. There's gang tackling. I mean, they're playing to the ball much better. I think they have an understanding of, here's our philosophy on certain downs. And what have they done a great job so far in the first two games is getting off the field on third down, and that is huge, and creating some turnovers.
Absolutely. Well, you know, that's a good segue into our first guest. Now, as you were saying as we started, we're continuing our tribute to Coach Ara, who was nice enough to be on our show quite a few times. So we're talking to some former players of his, and the one we're going to bring on right now was a player for Era and also went on to play for Dan Devine. But in the 1973 team he played on as a defensive end, they only gave up an average of 85 rushing yards.
It's pretty good.
A game. And the percentage passing for the other team was 38.7% pass completions. So let's bring Jim Stock on the air with Evan I. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Jim, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Awesome. Very excited to have you on here. Thanks so much. What we've been doing over the past couple weeks is just getting some memories of Coach Parsegian and kind of getting a feel for the type of person he was, the leader he was. If you could, you know, if there's one story that really resonates with you that could describe him as a person, as a coach, we'd love to hear it.
Well, I don't know that I have one particular story that would resonate. He, his pregame speeches were spot on and always got us ready to go down the tunnel. I will say probably his major nemesis was Southern Cal, and I think he kept trying to think of ways to get us to play better and win each year we played them. My first impression, my freshman year, I had a chance to travel out to California, and on Friday practice before getting on the plane, practicing indoors, finished up in about an hour, gave a little speech, we're on our knees, he's talking, and he's talking about the Trojan horse, how it gallops around the stadium when they score a touchdown, and next thing you know, he's saying, we don't want that horse to come out and gallop around the stadium. Next thing you know, coming out of one of the doors is a Trojan on a white horse. And I'm a freshman, first season. I'm thinking, what is going on? And all of a sudden, some of the seniors, as the Trojan starts to, I wouldn't say gallop around the track, some of the seniors started chasing the Trojan on the horse.
I'd like to see that.
And so, and actually they caught the Trojan on the horse. And I will say they pulled the Trojan off the horse. They didn't hurt him, but he did stop going around the tracks. And I will say nothing happened to the horse. The horse was fine. But that was my initial Southern Cal exposure, other than listening to the fight song every day, all day, in the locker room before that game.
So, I used to hate that horse and that song. I used to hate that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I had the same experience, too, in practice. We listened to that all week. It was over and over and over again. This is the WSBT Game Day show right now with Evan Sharpley and Tim Grau. We're with former Irish defensive end on the 1973 National Championship team, Jim Stock. Jim, talk to us a little about practice throughout the week. What were those practices like? What type of leader, what type of coach was Coach Parsegian, and kind of how did he structure those practices for you guys?
Well, being on the defensive side, Era stayed mostly on the offensive side, but there were times when he was up in that scaffolding that he would turn and watch the defense. There was one particular practice when, for some reason, I don't know why, I thought we were going to be on turf on, I think it was a Tuesday, and I don't know if we were going to be playing that week on turf, and so I wore my turf shoes out to practice. And we were practicing the 7-on-7 skeleton passing defense. And for some reason at that time, he turned to watch the defense. And in my shoes, I slipped and fell going back into coverage.
He had to turn around right when you did that, right?
Oh, yeah. And he's watching. And then like two plays later, I fall down again. And he starts hollering, hey, why is that guy falling down? And it's like, oh, it was not good. But
the other players have referred to that as the voice of God coming from the tower.
Yes. It was not good for him to be out on a geo practice, so especially from the scaffolding. But as far as like weeks of Southern Cal, it was everything was amped up about 10 times. We put J.K. McKay back then in those days, they'd make sure we knew who was wearing his jersey. And unfortunately for the prep guy, it was not good to beat him or Lynn Swan. It was not good. So kudos to those guys that had to play those players, because they got beat up pretty good.
So you get a chance to watch the games, and I know you were when we were talking the other day, you said you were down at Notre Dame and Clemson and stuff. Can you watch a game just as a fan, or do you watch a game as a defensive end and you're looking and you're seeing things, you're going, oh, I would have done this or done that?
Well, it's been a while, but I also did some high school officiating, so I'm kind of watching it from all those angles. And, of course, I holler at the officials on the TV every Saturday. But I really kind of watch the whole thing. So, you know, it's fun to watch the defense play well, and I think Notre Dame's defense played very well this past week. I appreciated it. I could see the passion and the stuff that I saw, and the fact you could tell they've been practicing tackling opposed to the way it looked last year. So it's good to see guys be able to tackle in the open field. Offensively, you know, I think back to that, not the 73 season, but the 72 season when Tom Clements was his first season playing. You know, he had his ups and downs his first season. We ended up losing three games that year, and that really dovetailed into the 73 season. So these are all college kids playing. Brandon Winbush, first season, everybody's got to give him a little slack. So that's kind of my impression right now so far.
This is WSBT's Game Day, and with former Irish defensive end Jim Stock. Hey, Jim, you also have a unique position because your brother was an assistant to Arrow. What position coach was he?
He was the special teams coach, and I think at some time he also coached the wide receivers. So there were a lot of times going up the after practice, the coaches saying, "Hey, hi, Mike." So I got called Mike a lot, my brother's name. We don't look at anything alike. He's 5'10", and I'm 6'3", and I don't know how they got me confused with Mike.
And you're better looking, too, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah. And I'm younger, obviously, too. So, but it was unique, the fact that he was on the staff. It was nice to kind of have your older brother there. But on the field, he was Coach Stock, so.
Jim, I'm interested. Tim mentioned earlier just how dominant the defenses were, you know, only allowing 85 yards and 38% completion percentage. What was it that made the defense so dominating?
Well, we had some really good players.
That helps, right?
I wouldn't put myself in that category, but, you know, I was Ross Browner's sidekick on that 73 team.
You're being too modest.
Yeah, so I still remember in preseason that year, Joe Yonto, we used to call him Uncle Joe, he would holler at me every drill, "Get off the ball, get off the ball." And I never heard him holler at Ross. And I'm thinking, I can't do anything right. And he's not even saying anything to Ross. I mean, what's going on? And then we finally started playing games, and I'm thinking, you know, I think the first time Northwestern punted in a season opener, we had no punt block on, and Ross on his own goes in, speeds in, and blocks the punt. And I was like, okay, here we go. That's why he doesn't holler at Ross. So it was fun being Ross's sidekick. We had Mike Fanning and Steve Niehaus as well. And so we had experienced linebackers. Secondary was really good. You know, we have Mike Townsend back there at free safety that's 6'3 and runs a 4.2 40.
And Luther Bradley was there, too.
To mess up.
Luther Bradley,
pardon?
Too?
Yeah, Luther, the old man. Yeah. We never knew a guy that was 18 and had gray hair. We didn't see that very often.
He looks still about the same now.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, he's on the show every year, and he's great. He looks just what everybody says he looked like back then.
He's probably finally just started to look his age.
Well, Jim, hey, we appreciate you taking some time and talking with us today. Hopefully you have a good rest of the day and an Irish victory. Before we let you go, what are your thoughts on the matchup today in Boston?
Well, Boston College always gives them a hard time. You know, we had some tough games with them ourselves back in the day. But it's one of those things where, you know, if you're supposed to be the best lineman or the best, if you're supposed to have the best offensive line you've had in a long time, they need to go out there and show it. I don't want to hear about it. I just want to see it.
Well said. We appreciate you taking the time. I know you were a little reluctant when I called you this week, but you did a fine job, and we appreciate you taking the time. You have a great day.
All right, thank you, and it was my pleasure.
Thank you. This is WSBT's Game Day. Immediately following us will be Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Then it's the official Notre Dame pregame show, and then the call of the game with the kickoff just after 3:30. We'll be right back with more football talk on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
May I have your attention, please? This is Tim McCarthy for the Indiana State Police. You're listening to WSBT, your radio home for Notre Dame football.
The Game Day Show is brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. Call Legacy to tune up your furnace before it leaves you in the cold. Also, Budweiser and United Beverage, Carmelo's at McCree's, Creative Colors International, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Hearth and Home. Tim, we're back. Countdown to kickoff here.
I think we just developed another friend there. He was a good guy. I can't tell you how reluctant he was to come on the show and talk, but I don't know what to say, he said. I don't know what stories. They have great stories.
Always great stories.
And they hear, like I said, when I was looking at those statistics on that team, 38% passing percentage, the opposing, and keeping them to 85 yards rushing. Oh my goodness gracious.
Yeah, I don't think too many offenses will want to play against them.
No. But so you had the same experience with those Trojan stories about playing USC?
Yeah, I mean, we would hear it starting Monday practice, and it was just over the loudspeakers over and over and over and over again. And I think, you know, the thought was because it's played so much, and it is, you know, it's played, it could be a one-yard carry on first down, and for whatever reason, you want to celebrate the one-yard carry, but the Trojan band does that. So it's just over, and on Monday you hear it, Tuesday you hear it, and by like Wednesday and Thursday, you're kind of starting to tune it out. And I think that was the thought process from the coaching staff was, it's going to be played so much, forget about it.
Right.
You're not going to hear it, you're just going to tune it out. But it was still pretty annoying.
I still remember growing up that game when they came back and scored 50-some points in the second half, and all this, that horse was just running around the track, and that song just gets, I think after then,
after the touchdowns and the scores.
Oh, sure,
it gets worse.
Absolutely. Well, another good friend, and I'll let you introduce him of the show, and we love having him on, especially when he's helps us out when he's at the game site for the away games.
Yeah, we've got Dr. Brian Radigan. Brian, good morning. What's your official title now here at Notre Dame?
At Notre Dame, I'm the head orthopedic surgeon for football and baseball.
Awesome. Well, kind of set the scene for us in Boston. How's the team doing? How are you doing? What's going on this morning over there?
You know, everybody's doing great. I actually, I personally didn't fly out with them on Thursday night when they all came out. I stuck back once they changed the time to 3:30. It gave me a chance to stick around for my son's high school game last night.
Big win again last night?
Yeah, St. Joe beat Elkhart. It was good. It's always good. Everybody stayed healthy. It's always better as I look at it from a different perspective. But it was fun. It's always different when your own son's playing. So it was great. Worth staying back. But I just got in here now, and I just kind of caught up with everybody this morning. Everybody's good. We're in a great position right now.
Well, Brian, obviously some changes after this last year, the 4-8 season, and Brian Kelly making, you know, some tough calls with his staff, especially in the strength and conditioning side. What does that kind of transition look like for you guys on the sports medicine side, different surgeries, assessing injuries? What's that relationship been like with the new staff?
Overall, it's been fantastic. I mean, I got to say, you know, the old coach that was here was really dedicated and determined, and, you know, he put a lot of time in. It was great. But, you know, sometimes you just need a little change. And I know Brian, as we all saw, struggled with that one because it's a close friend of his. He did great, but he also had some of his own health issues, which slowed him down some. So with the new change came a lot of energy, just a lot of new ideas for these players. But Matt Bayless, the head guy, as you guys all know him, he's got that growly voice that just kind of scratches. He's just... you know, perfect. He's exactly what you want. And what I like, I'm looking at it from 30,000 feet, but, you know, Evan, having been there before, you could appreciate it with your still heavy interest in performance with what you do on the side. It's amazing. You would love everything you're seeing over there. He is the, you know, mental, physical toughness. Let's institute a culture. Let's do this, but let's do it with details. I mean, he's not just a guy like just throw up the weights and, you know, go bite a steak. He's a guy who's making you do stuff, but you got to account for everything. And he set the tone immediately. And you can't yawn in the weight room without everybody doing push-ups. I mean, it's just to the details. People won't even yawn on campus now because they think of it. So, but it's great. It's, you know, as you know, if you got details, you're going to think of every little thing. But they have these groups they set aside, and everybody would have to focus on performance, just run times and weights lifted, and calories consumed, but other things like your body fat, your sleep patterns, being punctual, your grades, attending class, all that stuff was factored into these formulas that they have, and they split all these guys up into groups right out of the get-go. And there was always a loser. Every week there was a losing group. And so he basically said, you're going to hate losing as much as you like winning. And so there happened to be a volunteer 5:30 workout on Thursdays for the losing group. Volunteers in quotes. And they, it was, it was
mandatorily optional. Optional, mandatory.
Well, one of the workouts was great. I mean, and he crushes it. But then they followed up with everybody has their normal 6:30 and 7:30 workout. And that group had to go to their normal workout, too. So I remember Coach Heaston was there at 6:30 one day, and Eichenberg happened to be in one of the groups. And he busted his hump in that first group, did well. But then Coach Heaston showed up at 6:30 for the workouts and wasn't pleased with what he was seeing.
Not pleased.
Not knowing he was in the first group. And Coach Bayless didn't say a word, and Harry's right, just riding him, something fierce. And finally, after the workout, Bayless told Harry, Heaston, you know, he was in that first group, and Harry, you know, kind of felt bad. He's like, I had no idea. He's like, yeah, he actually did great, but what I liked is that he didn't say a word to you. Eichenberg didn't say one word. He's like, the kid's tough as nails. You know, so they just, little things like that just kind of make you smile when you see it. And then you get guys like Dave Ballou here now, and Jake Flint. The stuff that, this is where Sharpley would get all excited, so I gotta be careful. You know, Ballou is a velocity based training guy. You know, he is, how fast can you lift the weights? Right, so it's not just putting the weight up, it's how fast are you doing? How powerful are you? And there's this thing called elite form where you have cameras on all of our bars in the weight room. We measure bar velocity. And so there's a science behind it, and it's making people faster and more powerful, and it gives guys something to shoot for, and there's goals being made all the time. And then Jake Flint, who I think he goes to the weight room just for relief because he has five girls, I believe, under the age of like six. The guy's amazing. he's a saint. But he's there, and he manages the catapult system, which is that, you know, the GPS, I think we may have talked about it before, the little GPS that hooks on your shirt and shoulder pads. And so we can measure the guys out on the field all the time, and it's performance and workload. And there's just so much involved now. It takes five guys. The other guys are Dave Grimes and Dale Jones. These guys just collectively, people think, oh, it's not that big a deal. You just got to go write down the numbers and someone just watch them lift. It's so much more than that now, and it's super, super exciting.
This is WSBT's Game Day. We are joined by former Fighting Irish lineman and current Notre Dame head orthopedic team physician, Brian Radigan. Brian, we talked a little bit on the phone the other day about some of your memories of playing BC. We know a lot of those guys have some chips on their shoulder because they wish they were here at Notre Dame. But how about some of your memories you have playing BC?
Well, in my senior year was the first time we played them in a long time. And so we beat them 54-7. And that was the year they were shooting the film Rudy. So it's kind of a boring game, to be honest with you. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it because my role was to stop the tight end. And the tight end was getting about 10 or 12 catches a game. So personally, I had a lot of fun because he didn't have a catch. And so, you know, you end up getting the game ball at the end. And so anytime Holtz acknowledges you, you're pretty proud of it. So that was one game for me personally I was super proud of. But the crowd was never as loud as they were at halftime when they were shooting the kickoff film for Rudy.
Oh, man.
So, the place is rocking. And in the old stadium, I felt like it was going to come through the locker room. But then I figured out what they were doing. So that was as exciting as anything. But unfortunately, the next year is when BC upset us. I wasn't on the team anymore.
You were injured with the Colts at the time, correct?
I was with the Colts, and I had a ruptured disc and back surgery. So I came up, and I saw the Florida State game. And I came and became number one. And then I came up the next week and talked about the highs and lows. I don't need to go into that.
I was there watching too.
That was awful. So anyway, so BC's a great memory for me and just a bitter pill at the same time.
Well, Brian, tough loss last week, the Georgia game, 1-point loss. The psyche with this team, where are they right now? And kind of give us a primer for this afternoon, 3:30 kickoff against Boston College.
Yeah, they're great. They're actually, I think they're in a great spot. Their mental toughness is phenomenal. They were appropriately ticked off last week. And not at, you know, they weren't blaming anybody but themselves kind of thing. So everybody thought they could have had one more play. You know, just that was one of those games that was going to come down to who was going to make one more play. And they all... they all personally felt like it. There wasn't one person that was pointing the finger at anybody else. So you like seeing that. They're definitely a group that's staying together. They're tight. I think they're going to do great today. I really do. I just seems different. Flavor seems different this year. The culture's a little bit different. Everybody's, you know, on the outside world, the media, you can see how they take it. And I just cringe when I read stuff and hear stuff, but nothing's going to shut anybody up until you start winning, put a bunch of wins together. So I guess we just kind of have to see how it goes. But honestly, if I had to make a prediction, I'd say it's going to be a good day today.
Evan and Tim on WSBT's Game Day, continuing our conversation with former Notre Dame and Indianapolis Colt, Brian Rattigan. I can't let you get away without asking him about what's your feeling about seeing Jalen Smith finally getting to play with the Cowboys.
It was phenomenal. I got to, so Dan Cooper, who is the orthopedic doc down there, we probably kept in touch about every week since this all went down, and we've become pretty good friends since this. And it's been an amazing journey. His interest in Jalen truly is phenomenal in what he's done and tried to keep him going. And he just loves the fact that he's got a guy who's all in. I mean, Jalen's a smart guy who has done more than anybody's ever asked. They've just had to hone him back a little bit more than anything, which, as you all know, is exactly what you want. And they've had a great time with him. He's been in there watching film nonstop and just waiting. And he never once didn't think he was going to come back. Never once thought the nerve was going to be permanent. He just was kind of going to keep working until it did come back. And there wasn't a lot of signs supporting him that this was ever going to come back as long as it took. So even though it's not all the way back, you know, Jalen playing at 75-80% is like, you know, 200% of me. I mean, the guy's so gifted. I've never been able to touch what he's been able to do, and not many can, which is why he's able to play at the highest level and play well.
That was going to be my question, is at the time that injury happened, could you envision this 2 years later? Has it been 2 years, right?
So,
a little over that?
Yeah, it has. And so when those things happen, you kind of expect it to recover in the first 6 weeks. Like, I'm not surprised to see. We've had many players who have a knee injury and have a nerve injury initially. You tear multi-ligaments and you can get a stretch on the nerve. And it comes back, usually. Almost everybody comes back within 6, sometimes 12 weeks. And unfortunately, Jalen just never did. I mean, didn't even show a flicker. For 3 months, we had nothing. And 6 months, there's really not much going on. And so it was a pretty stressful time. And a hell of a gamble by the Cowboys, but it worked. I mean, he started getting recovery and it started to show. And I mean, Jalen would always show up and show him, hey, look, Doc, it's moving. But he was moving the other nerves. The one that was out was still not moving, but he wouldn't accept that. He goes, nope, it's moving. Watch. And he was just kind of like faking himself out by moving his leg around. I'm like, all right, Jalen, looks good. It wasn't moving yet. But now it is. So he's been a great story to follow, and it's continuing to improve. I mean, he's still getting more and more, so he may need a little help with that foot for the rest of his life, but it's not going to keep him off the field.
It's pretty amazing. I'm sure a great experience for you and everyone else that's been a part of that situation and bringing him back and seeing what he's done there. Well, Brian, we appreciate you taking some time today. Hopefully you don't have to do anything except enjoy an Irish victory this afternoon.
I agree 100%. I think it'll be great. Should be a fun day for us.
Thanks again, Brian.
Take care. You're listening for your home for Notre Dame football, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley. When we come back, we'll talk with the voice of the Fighting Irish, Don Crickey.
This is former tight end Robin Weber. My job was to catch footballs. Yours is to catch every Notre Dame game right here on your home for Fighting Irish football, WSBT.
The Game Day Show is brought to you by Kurt Outdoor Living, LKQ Pick Your Part, Zolman's Tire and Auto, and State Farm. To ensure everyone and everything that is important to you, give Tim Growl a call at 232-9981. Tim, we're back. Evan Sharpley, the Game Day Show, countdown to kickoff, 3:30 kickoff.
Always fun talking to Brian.
Brian's great.
I didn't want to jinx it, but I was wanting to ask him if they think, because we're relatively...
Yeah,
if all this training's helped not have an injury.
Right, and I was going to bring that up, and I think that you probably need a little more time to gauge that. You know, you brought in a new strength staff in early January, February, so you're going to see, and Coach Ballas, he actually admitted that it takes almost 2 years to really integrate a system and see, to get guys to their peak is what he was saying. So you're going to see some big gains, and I think that's something that the player spoke to quite a bit so far in this offseason, was feeling stronger, more explosive, and then also looking, they felt like they looked better. And, you know, athletes are
look
strange,
better, feel
right?
better.
Yeah, you look good, play good, feel good. So there's been that, you know, and he hit the nail on the head. I mean, the stuff that they're doing right now, all cutting edge, really cool. What Coach Ballou's doing as far as the force, you know, the elite form stuff, that's awesome. I mean, and the other thing that's really, he talked a little bit about in terms of creating goals for these guys, but you're getting real-time feedback on your lift. And then what it becomes is a competition between you and whoever is there at the platform with you. So, you know, you might have two offensive linemen going head-to-head or two linebackers or two quarterbacks. And let's say we've got a deadlift or we're doing bench or squat. And it's okay. It becomes less about how much weight we have on. That's part of it. But it's how much weight can we move fast. And that's something that we do at my gym at Sharpley Training too, is we say, all right, let's get the movement down. Then let's take that movement and let's do that movement fast. Then we'll add more weight to it. And then we revert back to the top and say, with that weight on now, are we still doing the movement correctly? And then are we doing it fast now? It's all about that velocity or speed development on everything. It's less about let's put a lot of weight on and move slow. When you get into a game, you have to move people quickly. There's got to be force behind it. So doing that, of course, then balancing it with the GPS systems and all the other, you know, there's some other areas they're doing. It's been really good. And I had, you know, a chance to talk with Coach Ballas a little bit right when he was hired about kind of what he believes is his true philosophy in lifting. And he doesn't really have, you know, there's not one magic area, you know, it's not, we're just going to do Olympic lifting. We're not going to just do pushes and pulls. There's a lot of different aspects, which is pretty cool.
What a change. I mean, it's all science and everything. Now, somebody that's seen a lot of changes in his career is our next guest, Hall of Fame broadcaster, Don Crickey. Don, when was the first game that you called again for college?
Well, the first college game, the first one I did of Notre Dame, I remember that very vividly, was 1975. It was the first time they played Boston College. And Notre Dame had a great young freshman linebacker from Cleveland named Bob Golick. And Notre Dame won that game. But now here we are, however many years later, and Notre Dame's on a five-year winning streak or five-game winning streak over the last 9 years. Alan Pickett said at one point it was almost like we had to get Boston College off the schedule because Notre Dame had a real hard time beating them. So they're always up to play Notre Dame. You know that.
Well, Don, Evan Sharpley here. Set the scene for us in Boston. What's it looking like there? And then, do you have a favorite place to eat when you're there in Boston?
Well, I have. I've been here a lot of times. One of them closed, but I guess it wasn't everybody else's favorite. But there's so many, you know, the Italian restaurants in the North End. We're actually a little ways away. Down in Chestnut Hill, we're just going through the Boston College campus now. It's Alan Pinkett at the wheel. But, so it's a great town. It's a great college town. And this game is, I'll give you an idea how big this rivalry is to BC fans. every time they have Notre Dame on their home schedule, they're sold out on a season ticket basis for their home schedule. That's the only way you'll get a ticket to the Notre Dame game.
I feel like that's a general consensus, and I'm not sure if it's shared on the opposite side with the Notre Dame fans. Do you get that same sense of it's a bigger game for the Boston College Eagles than it is for Notre Dame?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, every game, Notre Dame gets everybody's best game, but I mean, this doesn't compare to Notre Dame's schedule like, Southern California or Michigan State, teams that have been on their schedule a lot longer. This is Notre Dame's 14-9, so this is only the 24th meeting over the years.
Don, let's take it a week back. Notre Dame loses 2019 to Georgia last week. What are a couple of your takeaways moving into and kind of closing the book on that game, and what does Notre Dame need to do to bounce back?
Well, number one, I mean, people talk about, the sack at the end. Of course, it was devastating, but everybody seems, I don't know what game they were watching. There were two touchdowns reversed on upstairs calls, two of them, both calls went against Notre Dame. The one, apparently, the arm was down when Sanders ran back the kick up 100 yards. But the other one, the back judge was standing 2 feet away from where the guy made the one-handed catch in the end zone and came down, looked at his feet, looked at his hands. He must have seen something moving in the way of the ball because he waved it off immediately. It was overturned. They got a touchdown on it. So there's a, those could have been the ball games right there without question. And then there was the call against Aguilar, I guess it was, that pushed the quarterback inbound. Pushed him out of bounds. And it was ruled necessary roughness. It was a drive killer. It kept the drive alive. It was the third down play. Notre Dame stopped it, and they went on to score points. And that was the game also. Now you say, it was a marginal call. Would it have gone against the Southeastern Conference team by those officials? I'll ask you.
The SEC officials, right?
Absolutely.
This is WSBT's Game Day Show, and we're talking with...
Nobody's cheating. Nobody's cheating. Nobody's dishonest. You tell me where the 50-50 calls go in a game. Guys want to work next year.
We're getting you ready for the NDBC game with the voice of the Fighting Irish, Don Criqui. I was watching last night. I think it was South Florida I can't think who it was. They had so many penalties, and even Mac Brown was commenting that he just thinks they're getting so overly concerned for player safety that now they just call every little thing, including that one you just pointed out, maybe pushing the guy. He was still in bounds. I mean, the play was in action and stuff. Are you seeing things like that in general? Because I know...
That's a great point. I think that is absolutely correct. They are. And also, from a Georgia standpoint, the week before their starting quarterback, Eason, he was pushed out of bounds. It didn't look like much, but the way he landed on his leg obviously caused damage to the knee, and he's out for the season because of it. Probably for the season. So I guess they're looking very carefully at, I know in the NFL, the number one assignment of the referee in the National Football League, where the most elite officials are, because they pick the best ones from college, the number one assignment is protecting the quarterback. And so guys are doing that on every level now. But you're right about the injury thing, and they're looking for marginal things that might cause an injury. I guess they're flagging it.
Don, you mentioned the protecting the quarterback. Notre Dame has a very talented quarterback in Brandon Winbush, two starts under his belt now. This could be a third. What have you seen from Brandon so far this year?
Well, I saw Brandon in high school. Some people think he's the greatest offensive player that ever came out of the state of New Jersey, and they turn out around 150 Division I scholarship players a year. I've heard defensive coordinators, like the guy at Seton Hall Prep, who's been there for over 40 years, said he's the greatest player we ever won against. What people have to remember about Winbush, he hasn't played football in 3 years. He hasn't played since he just dominated the state championship game 3 years ago, where it was, Seton Hall Prep won it. He had limited time a couple of years ago against Pittsburgh, no time at all last year. So he's really working himself back into the rotation. And you were talking earlier, it takes a while to get up to speed. But as far as ability, he's got extraordinary ability. And I think, he can be a great player, but they've got to protect him a little bit more than they did certainly in the last game. But he's an unbelievable threat. He's got a 75-yard arm, and he's a threat to run to the end zone anytime he runs with the ball. He's a great player.
Don, show it. Don, anytime you have a young quarterback like that, it's going to take some time. What can help is a running attack. And that was one area last week where we saw an offensive explosion through the ground in game one against Temple. Yards were tough to come by against Georgia. Three really talented running backs in Josh Adams, Dexter Williams, and Tony Jones Jr. Do you think that there's going to be a different rotation. I know that's been talked about quite a bit this week. Dexter Williams not getting any carries, Tony Jones with one. Heck, what we've been joking is you and I had the same number of carries as Dexter Williams did last Saturday. Do you think that that's something that's going to change this week?
There's no question. Williams is going to get carries today. You're going to have Tony Jones in there, though, because I'll tell you why. They've got the best pass rusher perhaps in the country in Harold Landry. And Jones is a very good blitz blocker, you know, and Williams is not. I mean, a little bit that Wimbush played a couple of years ago against Pittsburgh, he got lit up by a linebacker that came. Williams never even looked at him as he ran behind him like a tackling dummy. He improved on that. But Williams, you know, 46 carries, 124 yards in the first game. I think absolutely he's going to be in there today. I know he is, as a matter of fact.
Don, what do you like about Notre Dame's defense? What are you seeing in the first two games?
About everything. I think this guy such tremendous defense.
Well,
down there.
That's what live radio is.
All right.
We just lost
well,
the connection.
Well, hey, I'll talk about the defense a little bit. How about okay. that? Last week, Nick Coleman, safety, there's a lot of question marks at what that safety position was going to look like. I thought he really blossomed. Some nice open field tackles from the safety position. You're seeing a defensive line, I think, grow up a little bit. Jay Hayes has been very active through two games. And really, that's, you know, that had been the knock over the past few years is play at the line of scrimmage. And you have to, you know, as an Irish fan, you have to love Mike Elko's philosophy on instead of read and react at the line of scrimmage, we're going to try to create a new line of scrimmage. And as a player, you really resonate with that because you are being more aggressive. You're taught to be more aggressive.
Which is naturally what a football player wants to do.
Absolutely. You know, when we always talk with Bob Gullet, I mean, I feel like Bob would like that type of defense.
Oh, absolutely. He'd go down there right now. He's ready to play.
And that, you know, yeah, he probably would. And we had Crable on a couple weeks.
Sure.
I mean, you know, a career leader in tackles, he would mm-hmm. probably have loved to be able to, you know, to slice and dice through some of those lanes. You have some talent at linebacker, Niles Morgan, Drew Tranquil had a really good game last week, one of his best probably in his career. I think he's settling into that rover position, and you know, the confidence level has to be much higher. So through two games, certainly love what you've seen, and want to continue to see that same type of growth as the season goes. But I think, you know, the verdict before the season started, I think there were still a lot of question marks on how quickly can there be turnaround. And I think you could say we had this a lot of the same players on a 4-8 team, if you know, a 4-8 defense where the defense was really struggling. But you know, through two games, I think that there are some, and I'm not trying to say that these guys are the 85 Bears, but there's some steps in the right direction, certainly.
And we have a lot. He loves to keep rotating different bodies in there, so that's going to spell well for later in the season, but also for next
year. For the
year.
Future, yeah.
Yeah,
and that was one. I think that was one knock over the past couple of years is, if you were the top line guy, you were playing and you were logging a lot of snaps. Well, that mm-hmm. was okay, but you're not in the NFL.
Right.
And if you're and if you're you know, one play away or there's an injury, then you put yourself. You know, it's you're putting yourself in a tough situation if someone does get hurt. But then also when that person graduates or leaves early, if someone leaves early, you're. Now you're in big trouble.
Yeah. So now you got a lot of rotation. You got a team that's in very good shape. I think we saw it last week. I mean, last week's game, you know, it was a night game. That's a long day, mm-hmm. right? And we were still as effective on defense
and
as
late
in
the game, too.
Yeah. Right. All right. I guess we thought maybe Don would call back in here, but Alan's driving and they're heading to the game. So we'll catch up with Don another game this year. So let's take a quick break and we'll come back and get your keys to the game and wrap it up. This is WSBT's Game Bay on your Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Welcome back to the Game Day Show. I'm your host, Evan Sharpley, on your home for Irish football, 96.1 FM. 9:60 a.m. WSBT. Notre Dame kicks off at 3:30 p.m. this afternoon in Boston against the Boston College Eagles. Notre Dame's had their number recently.
Yes,
and we're looking for a bounce back win.
You know, they have. And it, like Don was saying, it was quite a rivalry. So when you played... you played BC, correct?
I hated playing at Boston. It's the stadium's kind of right on top of you. And it was a night game when we played. They had a really good defense that year. We had played them at home in 2007. They were the number two team in the nation, and Matt Ryan was the quarterback. I played a little bit in that game, played well, but they had a really good defense. And the following year, good defense again up front, some really talented defensive linemen. It was a night game, so the fans, they prepared well for that game. And we got called quite a few different names, you know, spit on while you're walking out. And it's right on top of you. So you felt like, you know, they were right in their ear. You're right in your ear the entire time. So not a great place to play. But I think coming off of a loss, especially a tough loss like that, that's a good environment for a team, especially a team that is focused on leadership in the off season of, okay, here's a business trip for us. We're going into enemy territory. It's kind of a, you know, we're in this together type of mentality.
Well, let's get in the mentality for your keys to an ensuring an Irish victory. So what do we got, partner?
I've got three, and it starts with managing the environment, all right? So, you know, following that home loss to Georgia, Notre Dame's traveling here to Boston, and it's Boston College always has a tough nose. Their identity is always centered around hard work and, you know, being tough nosed, especially on defense. Their offense is struggling to, they're trying to switch to tempo a little bit. So Notre Dame needs to manage the environment, avoid the noise, both kind of from an outside setting, but also the noise of the stadium and what's going on with that. And really, folks, the mindset, like I said, should be that of a business trip. So key number one is managing the environment. Number two is dictate the tempo. That was something I didn't think that they were able to do consistently against Georgia. And it was tough. You're playing against a good opponent. On paper, this is a game where Notre Dame should be able to dictate the tempo offensively, defensively. From an offensive standpoint, I'd like to see them push the pace a little bit more. I'd like to see more of the no-huddle up-tempo.
I think everybody's been waiting for that more.
And really push the tempo with that. And defensively, then, it's going to be about stopping the run, controlling the line of scrimmage, and then putting some pressure on a young quarterback in Anthony Brown, who threw a few interceptions last week. If Notre Dame can create some turnovers, get some short fields, I think that this is going to put the offense into, you know, a really good position to score some points. And then the last one, this is kind of more of a coach speak thing. It's making adjustments, and I thought there were those opportunities last week. And again, it's point counterpoint, it's move, it's how you react to what's going on. You know, you've got two new coordinators, an offensive coordinator in Chip Long and then Mike Elko. You know, are they going to earn their paycheck after a loss and saying, here are some areas where we need to improve?
And the score?
I've got Notre Dame winning big, 38-13.
I'm with you today. This has been Game Day with Evan Sharpley. We want to thank today's guests, Jim Stock, Dr. Brian Radigan, and, of course, Don Crickey. Thanks also to our studio board operator, Matt Embry, for keeping us going on the show. Plan to join us next week. It's a 4 p.m. show for us as we get you ready for the Spartans of Michigan State with great football memories and stories with a variety of guests. WSBT's Fighting Irish football coverage continues. Right after the news, it's Sean and Eric with their analysis on today's game on Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Immediately following them, it will be the official Notre Dame pregame show. Then it's Don Creaky and Alan Pinkett with the IMG Network call. Stay with WSBT after the game for the official Notre Dame postgame show with Reggie Brooks and Darren Pritchett. All this on your home for Fighting Irish Football, 96.1 FM WSBT.
No, we just...